You guys just, y'all need to see this. I mean, all right, single file, everybody come up here and see what I'm seeing. This is the coolest thing that, you guys, I have to tell you, I've talked in some busted down places in my day, and this isn't it. This is the nicest place I've ever talked at. It's just amazing. It's a little high. Man could get a nosebleed up here, but it's, we'll see.
You ready for me, brother?
Okay. My name is Myers Raymer, and I'm an alcoholic. And I took my last nasty drink on January 15th of 88, and my home group is the primary purpose group in Dallas, Texas, and I cannot tell you what a pleasure it is to be here and to meet all you guys and gals. It's so funny. Hanging out with you guys is like, I feel like a Viking. I never felt so manly in my whole life. I'm going to go home to Texas and my wife is going to be smiling for weeks. It's going to be great. Well, maybe not. We'll see. Viking men and the prettiest women I've ever seen in my whole life. Danish women are a distraction, and I don't understand how any man stays sober here. Steps are, look at women, steps are, look, it's a no-brainer, man. We're all, I'm glad I'm married and happy. I want to thank Cole for ushering us around all afternoon and Ivar and the other guys. I don't know how many of you guys have been involved in putting a conference on or putting a thing together like this, but it takes a phenomenal amount of work. It's very frustrating. There's all kinds of things that can go wrong and usually do. And to know the work and effort that these men and women put in to putting this thing together is a phenomenal deal. If there's any way that you can support this thing dollar and cent wise so that they can get a good speaker up here next year, this is good. Do that. Do that. It's an amazing thing. We had a great dinner with Paul, and I got to embarrass this guy. Where'd he go? I don't see him now. There he is right there. He's 41 today, I believe. His birthday today, and so we'll give him an applause. The way I look at this thing, we've got... he's got 20 or 30 good years of helping drunks, and this is pretty amazing to see. Think of the thousands of men this guy will be able to help in the next 30 years. It's an amazing deal. You know, I sobered up in a little town in North Texas, and Chris, my twin brother, the evil twin you've probably heard about. Chris will be up here Sunday, and you'll know immediately why they call him the evil twin. But Chris and I were drinking buddies, and we lived together for a long time, and he worked with us at this bindery that my wife and I owned, and it was just a bizarre time. I mean, we drank and did those other outside issues a lot, and it was just things got pretty bizarre. Well, when Chris sobered up in November of 87, there was my best drinking buddy gone. And I'd love to tell you that I supported him and I told him how proud I was of him. I made his life hell. I said all the nasty things. I bugged you. Where's your big book? I mean, I just, it was bad. But I watched him for the next 2 months and I watched how his life changed. They talk about AA being a program of attraction rather than promotion. I watched Chris's life change right in front of me, day by day. The anger went away, and the discontent, and the frustration, and I just watched him change. And I remember being real drunk at work one night, watching him back there working. He'd been there 12 hours already, and he was still there. I wasn't. I was out getting drunk. And I came back to the shop, and I'm kind of standing back over in the dark, watching him back there work. And I just watched him. You know, here was a man who had found a solution to a disease that was had kicked his rear. Chris was the bad seed, and I used to always say, if I drink like him, I'll quit too. You know, we drank identically, you see, and I remember going home that night and telling my wife, you know, if there's any way I can do what he did, I'm going to do it. And so I called him and I said, will you take me one of those stupid meetings in the morning? And he said, yeah. And he did. He just kind of held my hand and walked me right into my first AA meeting. And it was just an amazing thing. I want to clarify something real quick. And I'm going to watch the clock and I promise you I'll be brief. I know I talk too fast. I haven't figured out this Danish language yet. And I haven't figured out the money. I haven't figured out much of any of it. But if I talk too fast, I'm encouraging you to, you cheap guys, buy the CDs and support the conference, and then you can play them real slow. You guys will be going, oh, that's what he was talking about. I understand. Most of you will be going, if I'd have known he was saying that, I'd have been really mad. So, what I want you to understand going in on this thing is that I'm not here. You guys didn't bring me all the way from the United States to judge you or to try to tell you how to have a better program. I mean, it's not my job to say you're doing it wrong and I'm doing it right. I'm just sharing an experience of 17 years of doing this work. And I've seen it from two different sides. I've got a crystal clear image of middle-of-the-road solution in AA that about killed me. I'm the poster boy for a middle-of-the-road solution. And I've also seen it from the standpoint of serious and intense work in the Big Book, which told me by a set of directions what it was I was supposed to do. And then I had me this crusty old sponsor that held me accountable and made me do the things that the book suggested I do. And the view is completely different. Completely different. And if your view is from the middle of the road side of the deal, I'm not judging you. My only reason for even mentioning it is that at some point in time, you may find that everything in AA becomes grinding. Everything becomes frustrating for you, because you're not getting the solution you need the way you're doing it. And so all I'm suggesting is that perhaps you could remember that there is indeed another way to do this work. And it was to follow a clear-cut set of directions out of this precious book. You see? And so that's all I'm saying. After the talk, don't come up and get real grindy with me because I said something about discussion meetings. I'll get it all out right now. I hate open discussion meetings. I think they're terrible. If that didn't hack you off, then we're home free, guys. We have nothing to worry about, because that's the most controversial thing I'm going to say. There's just so much to talk about. What I want you to do is I picture this situation. I'm brand new sober, and I'm sitting in these meetings. Remember the first meeting you ever got sat in? Remember? And how excited you were because there was a piece of hope. There was some excitement that maybe you didn't have to get up in the morning and do all that stupid stuff you'd been doing. And that's exactly the way it was when I sobered up in North Texas. It was terrific. 2 years down the road, things are still pretty good. We're still doing what we're supposed to do. And then things began to change in our fair group. One of the things that happened was that Chris moved. We had a Big Book guy in there that left. And it was left with a bunch of other guys in there, and some of these guys didn't do the book, and they didn't like the idea of taking any instruction from a book. We had 21 meetings a week, and all of them were discussion meetings. It was bizarre. And there were some guys that moved in, and the only reason I put this in this story and mention it was because I heard a man say one time that there is no such thing as a bad AA meeting. Let me assure you, there is. There are some cesspools of AA out there. So, these guys said, I think we're talking about God too much in our meetings, and perhaps we ought to not talk about God, and we'll just talk about some of this other stuff. And I was in the meeting that night, guys. I mean, I'd love to be able to stand up here all sanctimonious and say, are you believing they did that? I was there when they said it. And I didn't say one word. I just said, well, if that's what you guys think. And we voted God out of that AA meeting. And it was... If you think the meetings were goofy before, you should have seen them after we took our solution out of the meeting. You could sit in there for day upon day upon day and never hear anything that was solution-based. Nobody was staying sober. There was more... The only thing that was going on in that group was wreckage. Sexual wreckage. People just... horrible things going on. We had taken God out of the meeting. I'd like to tell you that I'm smart enough that I got right out of that group and found me a healthy group. But I hung in for another 4 years, almost 5 years after that, thinking in my own arrogance that I could fix it, that I could figure out some way to make it by the end of 7 years, guys. I'm telling you, I had gone from this goofy drunk that was doing toe sacks full of outside issues to a guy that was okay. I was able to hold work together some. My wife's my business partner in this deal. And we were just... Everything was okay. And then I began to get sicker and sicker and sicker until finally it just started falling apart. And if you can imagine how sickening it was for me to be 7 years sober and I'm writing hot checks all over Denton County. I cannot keep my eyes off other women. I'm not touching. I'm just looking. But sometimes that's as bad. I mean, when you're drooling every time a girl walks in, you know... I mean, what does that say to the men you're sponsoring? You know? I mean, it just... I'm so irritable. Somebody wants to start talking about something again, and I'm going, geez, why do you have to talk about this again? Didn't we talk about that stupid divorce yesterday? You see? And it just... I mean, where's the love? Where's the tolerance? Where's any of it? I don't... I am so... You know exactly what it's like. We in Dallas, other places too, I guess, we call them the walking wounded. We have meetings full of people that are hurting so desperately inside because the solution is not there. They've bought in. I heard a little lady this morning at a treatment center that we went to, and she said, well, I heard 90 meetings in 90 days. And every time I hear that, I used to say that all the time. Guys, I hate to break this to you, but nowhere in this precious piece of literature does it say that going to meetings is a solution to your problem. It is not in there. It is not. Okay, you arrogant little piss ants. Every one of you guys... half this room is going to go to your sponsor tonight and say, you know what? He said I didn't have to go to meetings. I did not say that. I did not say that. And I want you to understand how important the meeting is in the big picture of things in terms of getting plugged in. For many of us, for most of it was the first time we ever felt a part of and connected to anything. You see? It's hugely important. But you must understand that the solution is not just being with a butt in a seat in a meeting. It's about working the work and doing what we're supposed to be doing. So I'll cut to the chase. I'm sitting in this meeting, 7 years sober, and I'm so sad and so tore up inside I can't stand it. And I finally, at the end of this meeting, I said, guys, there's about 30 people in this room. And I said, guys, I got to tell you something. I don't think I'm going to make it. I'm really struggling here. And this guy interrupted me. And he said, Myers, all you got to do is just go to some more meetings. And I remember I got up, I said, thanks guys, I appreciate your help and I appreciate your kindness. And I walked outside. It was hotter than hell in Texas. And I remember the heat just bam, hit me in the face. And I walked up and I got an old beat up Toyota Land Cruiser with no air conditioning. And I just sat up in that car and I closed the door. I remember the way the inside of that truck smelled. I remember everything about that moment because all I could do is put my head down on that steering wheel and weep. Because I'm so tore up. There is nothing I can do. I can't go to any more meetings than I'm going to. And if that's my solution, I'm screwed. I'm simply screwed. A couple of nights later, I went into a beer store there in Lake Dallas where I live. And I'm standing in front of this beer cooler and I just kind of checked out. And I don't know how long I'd been standing there, but it was long enough for the lady behind me to be mad. She's tapping me on the shoulder going, hey, mister, are you going to get something or not? And it just kind of came to, and I looked around, and it scared me so bad, guys. I had no business being in that store. I wasn't there to get milk or eggs or nothing. I was there to get a beer. And it scared me so badly, I just backed out of that store, and I called Chris that night, and I said, Chris now lives in another town. And I called him, and I said, Chris, it almost happened. And he said, you know what? I've been telling you for 5 years to get out of that group and go find another group. Go find some place where the solution is. He said, don't do anything. In a couple of days from now, I'm going to be in Dallas doing a talk, and I'm going to get you plugged in with a group. We'll find somebody to help you. And I hung on with that hope. The funny part about it was that was the second time Chris had saved my life. He got me into this deal, and then he saved me the second time when he finally convinced me that I needed to move out of that group. And the only reason I mention any part of that story, guys, is because some of you tonight are sitting in groups that have gotten sick, that have gotten toxic because of the message that's there. Nobody meant you any harm. Nobody meant you any malice. These are all great men and women. But you need to look closely and ask yourself those personal questions. Am I getting a message of recovery here? Is there still hope here? Or are we just a bunch of guys that like to slap each other on the back and tell dirty jokes and drink coffee? And so much of AA has got there, you see. So Chris got me plugged in with this old guy, and I went and I met him. And I'll tell you this, it's like meeting Moses or somebody. I mean, this guy was close to 80 years old at the time, 70-something at the time. And I knocked on his door, and he opened the door, and he scared me a little bit. I never met the guy. I opened the door, and he says, where's your big book? And I mean, he didn't say, hi, my name is Cliff Bishop. He just said, where's your big book? And I went, I don't know, Mr. Bishop. I hadn't seen it in several years. And he said, well, here's mine. Don't come back without it. Just like that. Now, guys, intuitively I knew that I was in for a life-changing event. Because this old guy grabbed me by the shoulder, moved me into his living room, and we sat down, and in about an hour and a half, he had taken me basically through the work again. He showed me things that I had never seen before. And frankly, my mind is divided in two. Half of my mind is saying, this guy's full of crud. Yeah. And the other half is saying, wait a minute. Maybe he's got something here. You see? Because he kept talking about stuff like action and doing things and getting up off my rear and carrying a message and this kind of... And I'm telling him, you know, Clifford, I can barely stay sober. Why do you want me to go carry a message? You see? I'm not ready to do that yet. And I'm telling you, he whipped me like I was a small kid. I mean, he just nailed me with this stuff. He said, Tuesday night, we got a big book study. You be there. In the meeting. And I came back Tuesday night, and I'm telling you guys, the next 5 or 6 months was the coolest experience of my life, because what's happening is those guys are feeding me full of Big Book on a Tuesday night, and I'm calling him on Chris on a Wednesday in Kerrville going, Chris, do you know how long it took Bill Wilson to work this work? I'm getting really excited about this stuff, because all of a sudden the book that had been there for 7 years is now all of a sudden coming alive, and I'm starting to identify myself in Bill's story. Let me give you an example. We agnostics, I'm not an agnostic, so why read that chapter? Flip. I never said I was smart. But that's where my logic takes me. I'm not a wife, so I don't have to read that one. I'm not a this, so I don't have to read that one. Remember the line in the fifth chapter, How It Works, where it says, half measures availed us nothing? You know what? I mean, I always read that to say in my head that half measures availed you at least half success. It doesn't. Half measures availed us nothing, which means that I got exactly what I deserved. I deserved to be the way that I was because of the effort that I had put into it, which was exactly nothing. I heard a guy from the podium one night talk about, I was about 6 months sober, and he said, you know what? I'd shoot him tonight if I could. If I could find him, I would. I'd take him outside and you guys would be cleaning the blood up, because I'm telling you this. This guy said, you know, there are good 12-steppers and there are bad 12-steppers. And if you're not a good 12-stepper, you don't have any business doing that. Now, I don't know where he got it, but for me, that was my... he could not have said anything that made me happier. because I didn't want to do any 12-step work and I didn't want to do anything that made me feel uncomfortable. So I, in my head at that moment, I just said, I'm never going to be good at 12-step work, so I'll skip that part. Little did I understand, because I'd never read the book, that everything from the title page all the way through 164 pages in our text, I'm not sure what it is in yours, but the first part of the basic text, everything says that we are to draw a sober breath, and then we are to what? Go find a drunk to work with. Go find a drunk. You new guys in here, go find you that drunk. Did it ever, because we trivialized that whole thing, did it ever occur to you why Bill Wilson wrote an entire chapter, chapter 7, Working with Others? It got a whole chapter just for that one deal. It was a big thing. You see? A big thing. Let me read something real quick. On that 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Every one of you guys knows this by heart, right? Most of you anyway. But listen to this. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message. What message? That we'd had a spiritual experience as a result of doing these steps. That's the message that we need to be carrying. And yet for 7 years, people say, think I'm lying every time I say this. I said in I don't know how many meetings, I was going to at least 6 meetings a week for 7 years, and nobody ever said one word about a spiritual experience as a result of doing this work. I knew everything about Sally Sue's divorce. I knew everything about Joe's inability to get a job. I knew everything. But I didn't know one thing about a spiritual experience. So the first time I'm over at Primary Purpose and we begin reading this stuff, I'm thinking that it's possibly something Bill Wilson wrote to sell books. I did not believe it was something that was possible to have, that you could internalize it and have this thing called a psychic change. I'm still trying to fix my alcoholism through all the external stuff. I got to get the wife lined up and the job lined up and the car. We call it the Trinity. The job, the girl, and the car. Is there a man in here that doesn't know exactly what I'm talking about? If you came out of treatment, we were talking about this morning. If you came out of treatment, I guarantee you walked out the front door and you went like this. Smelled a little clean air and then you went, the job, the girl, the car. You forgot everything back here. Everything. Because the only thing that's important to a man at that stage of the game is, I got to get the job back so the income stream comes back. Then I can get the car back because I can't get the girl without the car. And once I get the car back, you see? And so And so as we focus on this AA Trinity thing here, we lose sight of the fact that God gave us a clear set of directions guaranteed to change our lives on a cellular level, to be reborn. We forget it all. And then we wonder why so many of us, weeks, moments, seconds after getting out of treatment, begin to flounder and begin to get all twisted up again. The spiritual malady rekindles itself and we get goofy. The mental obsession is there in full force to tell us that we don't have a problem. And then what do? Your head takes you back to a time when the booze worked, when the outside issues worked, doesn't it? And you're going, you know what? We were laughing about this stuff the other day. We won't. In your head for a moment, think of the worst thing that ever happened to you. In the depths of your disease, what's the worst thing that ever happened to you? Maybe you got raped. Maybe you got the crap beat out of you. Maybe you got put in jail. You pick it. It doesn't make any difference. And then I want you to stop and think what you were doing 24 hours later, 48 hours later. If you're like me, I know exactly what you were doing. You were drunk again. See, the normal drinker wouldn't think of doing that. I can remember my wife. She'll kill me if she hears me saying this in front of a bunch of nice people. But I can remember her when we were dating 20-some-odd years ago, 25 years ago. And I remember her, we were drinking a beer, and she dropped a hamburger in her lap. I don't even know if she was drunk or not, but she dropped this hamburger in her lap, and it embarrassed her so badly that, you know, as a normal drinker, when she drinks a beer now, or when she drinks something, a glass of wine, you know what she thinks of? That night. And she goes like, I'm not going to drink another one of those. I don't want that to happen. You see that? I was in a pizza joint one night up in North Texas, and I got in a little fisticuff with a guy, and I tried to kill him with a beer pitcher. This 19-year-old kid with a black cowboy hat about that wide, that's the only thing I can remember about the whole night. I almost did kill him before they got me off of this guy, and I don't even remember what it was about. Now, I forgot to tell you the good news. The good news was my 3-year-old daughter was standing right there watching the whole thing. You see? Well, guess what I was doing 24 hours later? I was drunk as a skunk again. You see? Because that's what we do. I'm a big one for asking questions. We get spoon-fed a version of AA in our meetings. And sometimes the book gets taken out of the picture. And we have well-meaning men and women who love us to death that tell us things that are not program-based, they're opinion-based. I've never heard one piece of opinion shared in a meeting that was meant out of malice. Nobody was being mean. Nobody got up one morning and said, "You know what, when I see Myers in the next meeting, I want to really screw him up. I'm going to give him some really bad advice." They don't do that. They don't do that. What do? Everybody they mean well. But you have to, at some point in time, you have to be proactive in your own recovery. You have to be able to know the book well enough to know that when Sally Sue starts talking about some stuff, that she's talking opinion, not program. And if you're new, it's hard to tell which is which, isn't it? I know it is for a lot of you. For a lot of you guys, you've been around a long time and you're still having difficulty telling what's real AA program and what's just somebody's well-meaning opinion. And so the first thing that we need to do on this thing is, because that 12-step, the way it was written is, it said having had a spiritual experience, so what's the first thing that we have to do? Have the spiritual experience. And if you have not, do it. I mean, see, the guys that I worry about are not the young guy coming in here so much. I'm worried about the guys my age that have been doing this thing kind of middle of the roady and kind of helter-skelter all these years. They're here, they're sober, they still want to be involved, but they're really not sure about what this whole thing is about. In the depths of the night, they think about these things. Do I really understand why I'm an alcoholic? Do I really understand why I drink this way? Do I really know what it is I'm supposed to be doing with this new guy that asked me to sponsor him? Men, don't we do that? We ask these things, and I hate doing it in the middle of the night because I'll lay there for 2 hours going, do I really know what my responsibility is to this man, to this group? See? So the first thing that we need to do is ask ourselves, have we had the spiritual experience? If we have not had the spiritual experience, then let's do what we have to do to get plugged in. If you're an older guy or if you're a younger guy and you've not done this stuff, go find you a sponsor that has had the spiritual experience and work back through the work. You may love your existing sponsor. It doesn't mean you got to can somebody. It doesn't mean you got to shoot them in the parking lot. Just, you screwed my AA up. That's what you did. Don't do that. Just go find you a sponsor who's done the work and had that spiritual experience and then go do that. If you don't know, some of you guys are going, I don't know if I've had it. Let me ask you a question. Okay, let me ask you this question. Do you know if you've had sex or not? You better. Chris and I were laughing about this stuff one day. You remember when you were real young or pretty young or whatever it was when you were just talking about sex? Don't worry, people with kids, I'm not going to say anything nasty, honest. I have 3 daughters. I got to always worry about this stuff, you know? You remember just talking about it? And your friend maybe did it, and then he's telling you all about it, you know, like this, and you're going, oh man, it sounds great. And then on down the road, you actually do it. And then you go back to that friend and you go, buddy, you didn't tell me about this. I mean, you see what I'm saying? You can't describe that kind of deal. And it's the same way with the spiritual experience. As you do the work and as you begin to change internally, it's hard to describe. And so for many of us, we get off into AA far enough that now our arrogance and our ego is to a point to where we don't want to admit that maybe we have missed the experience. And so I implore you, if you're questioning that, come see me And then let's get you plugged into a bunch of these guys. I've talked to a ton of guys this weekend, all who have done the stuff. I've seen very little middle-of-the-road stuff. Most everybody I've talked to is so plugged into this work that you are truly blessed to have them here. These are true leaders in your community in the AA deal. They know what they're doing. Trust them. Because your life will be changed forever as a result of doing this stuff, guys. We were at a men's meeting last night. I think it was last night. I did. I'm so befuddled. And I was blown away by the maturity that these men showed in this meeting. Unbelievable stuff. You should be very proud to have these guys here. Yeah. Let me tell you the reason that you need to be proud of these men that are doing this. And I'm saying this because I've met more men than I have women. And I only met you women in my dreams. You're special. The reason that you need to be proud of these men is because it takes courage to do what they're doing. You understand, it to take heat from an AA community that needs to be unified is tough. And it takes some real courage to stand there and say, you know what, this is the way the book told us to do this, so we're going to do it this way. It takes a great deal of courage and commitment to do that. And some of these men, like Chris and Alicia and some of these people that have done this, have taken a huge amount of heat over the years. For what? For getting back to the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous? Doesn't that strike you as bizarre that we would have to defend the text, and yet we do it all the time? I was doing a talk in Fort Worth a couple of years ago, and a woman physically pulled me off the podium. Physically, like this. And then got right in my face, and she's hit me in the shoulder so hard that I'm going, lady, stop. I'm not a Viking yet. I can't take this. She was so irritated. And I was going, lady, I didn't invent this stuff. I didn't write this text. Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, and 100 men and women who experienced it wrote it. All I'm doing is trying to get you focused back on it. I don't give a rat's patootie if you get it or not. Thanks. I'm out of here, you know? Gee. Glad I'm not married to her, too. I guarantee you. But some people get like that, and it's okay. I want to talk about this 12-step stuff real quick, okay? Because everything that we're doing this weekend, Chris Sunday will primarily talk about sex with animals and things like that. It's what he usually talks about. But but when he finishes, He's going to address the big picture talk about why we do the things we do. Why are we here? Because you must understand that. Why? It's not so important that you understand it just from your own selfish standpoint, but because you can't transmit what you haven't got. So if you don't understand this body, mind, and spirit, the threefold disease that kicks our collective rears, if you don't understand that, then you can't carry that. And so when the new guy sticks out his hand and says, would you help me? You go, ugh. Okay, call me in a couple of months and we'll talk about it. I mean, you'll do anything you can to dust him because you don't really understand the deal yourself. And you must do that. Alicia does a great job in the middle part of this thing too, explaining the cause and effect of why we're here doing this stuff. The biggest single piece of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that we have trivialized and left out of the picture is this precious 12-step work. This responsibility to get up off your rear once you've been given this gift and go carry that message to another drunk. There are thousands upon thousands of us out here that believe that I'm going to sit in a meeting and discuss things and make coffee and discuss things again and never get off my rear and go carry a message of recovery. If some sick guy comes into our meeting and sits down right across from me and I can't avoid his eyes and I cannot avoid him talking to me, I may be forced to address this sponsorship thing with this kid. I'm not taking your inventory. I'm telling you, I did that for years. That's the reason I know it so well. I don't want to sponsor you, thank you. I want to come and talk and sit on my rear end, but I do not want to have to take the responsibility of another drunk's life. You see? And the funny part about that statement is that in making that decision, I've taken away every reason for me being here. I've taken away the secret handshake, if you will, of AA. And if there is one, it's that. Our responsibility to carry a message to our brothers and sisters in this fellowship that are so desperate for a solution out of this deal. Not any well-meaning opinions. They need the facts. How do I get from point A as a slobber and drunk to something like you that can love and live life and be creative and be vibrant and be a member of society? What a distance from where we were to where we need to be. You see? And once it's happened to you, if you're sitting on your butt not carrying that message, shame on you. I will take your inventory from that. We've been given this, the most precious gift that God has ever given a man or a woman. A chance to walk free and clear from this deadly disease. And for us to hoard it like it's ours, like we own it, this is not good. But in carrying that message, guys, there's a line on page 132 in on our text, and I guess it's in here somewhere around there, that says that we have recovered and been given the power to help others. The illusion is that we must learn so much and we must be AA scholars before we have what it takes to go carry a message. Let me tell you something, guys. I sponsor a fistful of young men that don't know a great deal about the book yet. They're learning, but they're not quite there yet. Let me bring them up here and let them loose on you for a couple of seconds, and I guarantee you they'll be wailing and gnashing of teeth by the time they get back there. These men, if you even seem like you don't understand the book, they'll be right in your face. They'll be carrying what they know about this program. They'll be sharing what's happened in their lives. They'll be carrying that hope. This horse crud about saying that we got to be in meetings for a year before we help a drunk. Well, I'm sorry. I've been through the book a few times and I can't tell you where that is. If you're sober here a day, tomorrow you'll be sober 2 days. And there'll be somebody in here that's been sober a day. And you know what that new guy wants to know? That new guy wants to know, can I get up on my second day and not drink? Can I get up on my second day and not obsess about putting something in my body to make me feel whole and okay? And he doesn't want to hear the message from a crusty old fart like me. He wants to hear it from you. He wants to hear it from a kid who's living it right then. And there is nothing sweeter, guys. I'm telling you, there is nothing sweeter. You men and women that sponsor people right now know exactly what I'm talking about. You sponsor women and men, and you watch them change. And then you watch them. I'll never forget the night I walked in, and one of the first guys that was one of my really kind of success story kind of guys, he was just a busted up street guy, and I watched him change. And I walked in, been sober 3 weeks. I want to say this again, guys. He had been sober 3 weeks. We had worked through the work. He had had that psychic change, and I walked into that door, and guess what? He's sitting in the middle of this room. We're setting chairs up, and he's sitting in the middle of the room with a big book on his lap, and there's another man facing him, knees touching, with a big book on his lap, and he's carrying that man through the work. And I'm telling you, I went, oh. And I backed up out of that room, and I put my head against that wall, and I wept like a kid, because there it was. The dots had been connected. I finally understood. This is not about whether Meyer stays sober or not. This is about whether we can effectively carry a message of recovery here that can be transmitted to him and her. Can it? Sure it can. And if that's not good enough news, they can transfer it to her. Is there anything sweeter on God's green earth for a group of busted up drunks and addicts to be able to take a message that is so powerful that it affects everything about the people that we sponsor? Is there any more? I guess an outsider would look at my life and they would say, you know what, Myers, your life is pathetic. You just work with those drunks. Maybe my life is pathetic. But I'm telling you right now, guys, there's nothing that I've ever experienced that is so sweet than to see lives change and people become healthy and wives embrace their husbands again for the first time in years and kids not do this when you walk in the room. You know? It's not about not drinking, guys. This is not about not drugging, guys. This is about how do we walk through life with our head up and have some dignity. How do we walk through life being able to be of service to another man or another woman? To know that our lives counted for something besides some lame, goofy, self-serving crap that we do all the time. I want to tell you a quick story and then I'll stop. Some of you guys have heard me talk about this kid named Terry. It's a quick story. And the main reason I tell it is because it perfectly demonstrates exactly the stuff that I'm talking about. This need to refocus what we do and get more plugged into what our primary purpose is. Tradition 5 said that our primary purpose is to carry the message of recovery to another alcoholic. It wasn't to solve Sally Sue's marital stuff. It was to carry a message of recovery. You see? So picture this situation. There's a place in Dallas called Homeward Bound. It's a place for indigent drunks. You guys all make too much money to go there. This is for really, really tough guys. And we're carrying the message there. Our group has sponsored 800 or 900 men and women out of this thing. It's an amazing place. And you ever see a guy in the fellowship that you pray he doesn't look at you? I mean, Terry. Terry's a little shorter than me with red hair that sticks straight up. Hadn't had a haircut in eons. And he was living on the street out in the hood, out in Oak Cliff, which is kind of a rough area. And he was sleeping in the back of an old pickup. And some street gangs came by and grabbed him by the ankles out of his truck. It wasn't his truck, it was just a truck, but he was sleeping in it. And grabbed him by the ankles and pulled him out of the back of his truck, face first. And they still have his ankles, and the first thing that hits is his face, and it breaks his nose, busts his lip, and cracks all of his teeth out. So fast forward 3 or 4 days later, he's sitting in my meeting. And I look at him, and I kind of went like this, and I'm going, oh, gee. I mean, he's scary looking. Sure enough, I finish my talk, we get done with a deal like this, and I turn around like this, and boom, there's Terry right there in my face. I'm going, God, we're going to chat later. Sure. Terry says, would you sponsor me? And I went, why did I not know you were going to ask that, you know? Sure enough. So we start the work, and I'm from the school that believes that we need to work these guys through the work quickly. 45 days, 90% of my guys are through it. And it's hugely effective. They get the deal. My thought on the process, I know some of you don't agree with me, but my thought is if you got the greatest gift ever given to man, a chance to walk free and clear of this, why do you want to wait a year or two for him to get it? I want him to get it now, you see? So, so here's Terry, this busted up mess of a man, and I used to do all my fifth step stuff out in the park, and we're sitting in this park with the sun to the back of me, the west, and the sun's going down, and he's sitting over here in front of me. The reason I'm telling you this part of the deal is it's amazing how your perception of men change as you begin to do the work. I've got him pigeonholed as a goofball loser that scares me because he looks so bad. And he's sitting on his park bench, and he looks up, and the sun comes out from behind these clouds and illuminates his face. And his hair is on fire, and he's got these green eyes that are the prettiest eyes I've ever seen. I know, somebody's going to say, you need to deal with that in therapy, Myers. I'm telling you, this kid was the most lovely man I'd ever seen in my whole life. God was blessing the situation, and it was an amazing thing. I worked through the work with this cat, and I'm telling you, he doesn't miss a trick. Yeah, I'm trying to point out his stuff. He's like, oh, don't forget dishonest here. See this dishonest part? Yeah, Terry, I see it like this. I mean, he's flat on fire. Does his 6 and 7 that night, comes back with his amends list. We work through this stuff. He's off and running. A week later, Terry shows up at our meeting. He lives in the hood, which is, 25 miles from where our meeting is. He's riding the bus to the meeting. Listen, in Texas, the bus is not something that everybody does. Like here, the mass transit is cool. There, everybody's got a car, and they take it, and nobody rides the bus unless you absolutely have to. You see, the Terry's there. every time we have a meeting. And I watch him, and he walks in one night and he says, "Myers, can I borrow $5? I said, "Terry, I already told you, I don't loan money to drunks." And he goes, "I really need the $5. And I said, "I really have the $5 here. Anybody that asked why, I'm their man." I set it down. Terry takes the stuff and leaves. I'm thinking he's going to use it for bus fare or something. Terry comes back in on Thursday night for our meeting. He's come back over off the bus, and he's got a bucket and a squeegee and a little mop thing. I said, "Terry, what's up?" He said, "Well, I bought this stuff with your $5. Here it is back." And he paid me the $5 back. Cool. I wish I'd have loaned you $100 now, you know. And he said, "Oh, I forgot to give you this." And he handed me a business card. And it was a little homemade business card about yay big. It said, "Terry," whatever his last name was, "window washing." And he'd hired a couple of guys out of the same treatment place where he was to go with him. And they were walking door to door to door washing windows. I got 20 men I sponsor right now that are struggling to find a job, and they won't get off their rear end to go do anything. I can't even get them to fill out applications. And Terry's out there going door to door to door. Oh, not in the hood. He's taking the bus all the way into the rich part of town and doing it there. And then he takes his bus all the way back out to the hood again. You see? He's doing his deal. And I'm watching this man day by day by day. Fast forward a month. He's studying. He's talking in meetings. He's sharing. No goofy stuff, guys. I'm talking. He never, ever opened his mouth that he didn't have a book in front of him. I was so proud of him. I was delirious. I was so proud of this kid. He comes in a month later and he says, "Well, I got my driver's license back, and I've applied for my commercial license, and I'll have it in a day or two." And I said, "What does that mean, Terry?" And he said, "I'm going to go back on the road and drive a truck." I said, "Okay, you know, I'm just kind of worried about the whole deal, but, you know, he's fine." So Terry leaves on this trip across country, his maiden voyage. And he calls me from someplace in Tennessee. And he said, "I got to tell you this story. I don't know if I did right or if I did wrong." You know, don't you hate to get that call in the middle of the night? So I said, "Well, tell me what it is." And he told me he had gone into this little town in Tennessee, and he had asked around for an AA meeting, and nobody knew anything about an AA meeting. And so he said, "Well, do you know a drunk here?" And the guy said, "Yeah, right down there." And there was a cat sitting in the cafe. There was an old busted up drunk. And Terry started talking. And guess what they did? They started a meeting. I mean, I'm not talking about they just had a meeting in the cafe. They started a group in that little town based on Terry's efforts there. And I'm saying, he said, "Well, did I do good?" And I said, "Well, Terry, what do you think, buddy? This is great." And so every time he would drive through this place, cross country, he'd pull into this town, he'd look this cat up, and they'd have this meeting. And now there's two or three other people, and four or five other people, and they got an AA group in this town now. And you know, the weird part about this stuff was that Terry called me again from some, last time I heard from him, he was up in Boston someplace, and he said, "Well, it happened again." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "We couldn't find anybody that had an AA group, so we started one." You see, Terry knew what his primary purpose was. He's a brand new busted up drunk, and he already understands what his primary purpose is. It's to carry a message. And if he can't do it on his own, he's going to get some guys to come with him. And the fellowship that he craved sprang up around him. All those people. He was a hero in those towns because he was a voice of sanity where there was none. You see? How cool is that stuff? Last I heard, he was in Montana someplace, and he'd settled down with this little gal. He'd gotten married, got him some new teeth. If he was sitting in this meeting tonight, I probably wouldn't recognize him. He probably looked so good. But you see what I'm saying, guys? And then we have thousands upon thousands of us sitting in meetings not willing to get up off our rear and do anything. We have everything. We have cars. We have jobs. We have that good-looking Danish babe right there. We have everything. And yet it's not enough. We still won't understand what our responsibility is to the new guy that's out there. Please, don't sit in your group and wait for the drunk to come to you. If you don't have a place to go carry the message, come see me. I'll tell you how to find them. They're everywhere, guys. There's tons of them. We found a bunch of them already here. There's tons of places to go. If your group's not doing it on a group level, make it a group project. Get six or seven of you together. Get excited about this stuff. Get your books and get out there. And watch what happens. Watch how many lives you affect. And as 1 year drifts into another year, and then into another year, look back and see how many people you've affected by the clear-cut message that you carried. How many people are walking free today that may have been dead? You see? And then maybe your life will be as pathetic as mine and you can get out there and do it all the time. But it's just, there's nothing sweeter. Do the work. And when you do, those that have already done this and understand, to end a day and to sit on the edge of your bed, smoke that last cigarette or drink that last glass of iced tea, just sitting there thinking about your life and what it could have been had you not gotten involved in this deal. How sweet it is to be able to get up in the morning and take a deep breath and know that God is good and that life is good. You know? How good. There are so many out there hurting tonight, guys, that need us. That need us. After this weekend, you'll be all jazzed up, I hope, and you'll be all ready to go. And we need you out there with us. We need you in the trenches doing the stuff. And when some old-timer takes your inventory or somebody slaps you in the face because you're not doing it their way, tell them to screw off. Tell them to call me. You know? I want to thank each and every one of you guys for asking us to come do this. I can think of nothing in the world that's funner than watching lives change as a direct result of a clear-cut message that Bill Wilson and Bob and those 100 guys brought us almost 70 years ago. It's an amazing deal. To know that AA has been in Denmark, I think, only 10 years, you guys are in for a treat. Because we had 60 years to screw it up before we finally got back on track where we are, and you guys are right at the beginning of this whole journey, man. Get out there, kick some butt, and see what happens. I love every one of you. Thank you.